Following podcast was recorded on Wednesday, April 10th, 2024, featuring Jim Bianco of Bianco Research. To hear the podcast in real time, you can sign up for a free trial at biancoresearch.com or arborresearch.com, or by emailing Gus Handler directly at gus.handler@arborresearch.com. You can also call Arbor Research and Trading at 1-800-606-1872. Thanks for your time and enjoy the podcast. Welcome everyone to the latest edition of Talking Data. I'm your host, Kristen Radish with Arbor Research and Trading, joined today by our commentator, Jim Bianco of Bianco Research. Welcome, Jim.
Thanks for having me.
Today, Jim discusses the big picture on the inflation and the economy. Jim, how is the economy performing and what are the expectations?
Yeah, so let's start with those questions. The economy is performing very well. The expectations had been that you would see some form of weakness or slowdown or soft landing. Some even were still hanging on the idea that there might be a recession. And I think that that's all but disappeared right now. And in light of the surprising CPI report, instead of doing a forensic analysis of, you know, core did this and headline did this and energy did this and shelter did that, I thought that, which we, by the way, did in our Inflation Watch update this morning in our News Clips product, I thought what would be better to talk about is what is the big picture? What is happening with the economy? So let's go to the first chart. And the first chart is the Conference Board's U.S. Index of Leading Economic Indicators. It is an indicator of 10 measures of the economy that's supposed to lead it. And I put the title on the top of it, my favorite quote from the UK statistician, George Box: all models are wrong, some are useful. So this is a model. This is a model that's supposed to tell us what's going on with the economy. It peaked in December of 21. It bottomed in January of 24 before it upticked. So if we go to the second chart, it shows you the consecutive monthly negative streaks, not the positive streaks. All the gaps would be positives. And you can see that it went down for 23 months in a row before it upticked in January. Now, this model was last updated in 2012. And from 1960 to 2012, it did a fairly good job of predicting the economy. When you had a negative streak in the leading economic indicators of about 8 or 9 months in a row, it was almost always a shaded area. The longest was actually January of 2008, 10 months in a row before you actually hit the recession there. But the current one ran 23 months and we did not have a recession. And you could see that in the next chart. So the top half of the next chart is those 23 consecutive negative months. And the bottom half of the chart is GDP, and there's a bunch of green bars. As you know, we had a couple of negative bars at the beginning, but then those disappeared and we had green bars. So let's go back to George Box's quote: all models are wrong. The leading economic indicators, which was revised in 2012, is wrong. It is not a good indicator of where the economy is going, but some are useful. This is also useful because it's telling us that whatever was the last cycle, and like I said, this was redone after the Great Recession in 2012, those relationships are not working. The economy has fundamentally changed. I've been fond of saying on this podcast and lots of other places that when an economy either has a financial crisis or a recession, and we had both in 2020, coming out of it, things change. And coming out of the 2020 lockdown restart, things changed. For those that have been regular listeners to me, you're rolling your eyes going, you say this all the time. Yes, but we still don't get it. And this is the biggest problem that we have, is that this is a different economy. And I also like to warn, different is not worse. It is not dystopian. It is different. It went from an apple to an orange. An orange is no better or worse than an apple. It's just different is what it wound up doing. So what is different? Well, the biggie, if we go to the next chart, is remote work. So here's Tassel, the key card swipe system, the security cards that everybody uses in the big office buildings. March 27th, the latest data we've got from them is 51%. So if you have 100 employees, that would be 500 swipes a week. You're getting about 255 swipes a week. 51, 52% is how to read that chart. And there's a bunch of cities in there too. So Austin, Texas is up around the mid 60s. And on the bottom end of it in, is Philadelphia, somewhere down in the low 40s. We are seeing remote work really become entrenched as a permanent thing. And as a permanent thing, I've argued, it changes so many things. It changes the way you work. It changes the way you live. It changes the consumption basket that you have. It changes a lot of things. It fundamentally is changing the economy, even though it's only maybe half the workforce, because half the workforce, doctors, waitresses, you know, firemen, policemen, surgeons, carpenters, they can't work remotely. But 50% or 80 million people can. There's 160 million people in the workforce. And that if they are working remotely, it is changing a lot of things. And we are having an inability to understand that these things are changing. So if we go to the next chart, Bloomberg does a survey of economists, asks them lots of questions. They ask him, what do you think the next 6 quarters are going to be? Fill in the blank. One of the questions is core PCE. This is the Fed's favorite inflation measure. So the black line is actual core PCE. The red line in the shaded area is the Fed's target. The Fed targets this at 2% plus or minus 50 basis points. That's the shaded area. All the colored lines on this chart are all the monthly forecasts back to 2009. And what you see is wherever we are in 6 quarters, the median forecast is we're back at 2%. If we're below it, we go back up to 2%. If we're above it, like you can see in 22 and 21, we go back down to it. In the latest set of forecasts, we're going to go back to 2%. Economists are telling you, and the consensus of Wall Street economists is exactly in line with the consensus at the Federal Reserve. The consensus of economists is, yeah, there might be remote work. Yeah, the LEI isn't working, but nothing has changed. It is still the 2019 economy. It's still the economy that the LEI was created in 2012. And so they keep predicting that everything is going to normalize. I've been on that word now for a long time. You know, what's abnormal that we're normalizing, or we're going to return to pre-pandemic levels? And I've argued, no, we're not. We are normal. This is the new normal economy. And the new normal economy has supply chain constraints because we've changed our basket. We've got more geopolitical problems with choke points and shipping, just to name one, that is going to lead to perpetual supply bottlenecks and then not bottlenecks. Our consumption basket has changed. Our demand is changed as well too. So a lot of things have changed about this economy that we're just not getting our head around. And what we do when we see another surprising report like CPI is dig deeper, forensic analysis on the next level and the next level, so that we could say, here's the three things that have said that made this number higher, so we can ignore it and say, it's all okay. We're still going to go back to 2%.
Jim, what changed in 2020?
So let's go to the next chart. And the next chart basically shows you the disposable income or the personal savings rate based on disposable income. Just so everybody understands what we're looking at here, this is your total income. Your total income is your paycheck plus your investments, or maybe transfer payments. That's a fancy word for saying, do you get disability insurance or Social Security or Medicaid or Medicare or something, welfare or something like that. Less what you spend. The difference is the savings rate. Now, a lot of people consider their savings, my stock portfolio went up or down, or my home price, according to Zillow, went up or down. Yeah, that's fair to consider that as your savings, but that's not this measure. This measure is how much of your paycheck do you spend, how much of your income, which includes the biggest part is your paycheck, do you spend left everything else. So prior to 2007, there's a green arrow going down to 2.5%. The savings rate went all the way down to 2.5% by 2006, 2007. Why? Because we were in a booming stock market. And home prices were in a bubble. We now know that because we had the housing bust in 2007 and 8. Look, I could spend 100% of my paycheck because I own a bunch of stocks in a stock portfolio, and Zillow tells me my home price went up again this month, and there's my savings. And if that just continues, I'll be able to retire. Well, then we had the financial crisis and home prices collapsed the most on record and stock prices fell almost 50% and it scared the hell out of everybody. So coming out of the financial crisis, 2010 to 2020, the blue part of the chart and the blue horizontal line, which is the average, is the savings rate went from 2.5% to 6%. Oh, I better save more. I better make sure that I have an emergency nest egg just in case something bad happens. And that's why we talked about the lethargic recovery of the economy in 2011 and 12. We weren't spending as much. Then you see the big spikes in this chart. I love the savings rate chart because it's like a dissection of human experience, is what our human economic experience, to be more specific. So you see the big spikes in the chart. Those were the stimulus checks that were sent out during COVID, when the government literally mailed everybody money, and the savings rate spiked to an unheard of 32% for 1 month and then 26% for another month. But then coming out of that, you see the red part. Since 22, the savings rate went from 6% down to 4%. What happened? I think it's a combination of two things. I think it's a combination of maybe I don't need emergency savings because when bad things happen, the government mails me thousands of dollars. That's my emergency savings. And YOLO, you only live once. We had a near economic death experience. In the beginning, we actually thought it might have been a health death experience, you know, depending on what the mortality rate was of COVID, which thankfully turned out to be very low. So I'm not going to waste my time. I'm going to live my life. So I'm spending more money, and I'm going to spend more money than I did before. And you could see that in the next chart, because the next chart basically shows you the personal consumption of GDP. So what is the biggest component of GDP? Personal consumption, what you and I and everybody else, we spend, you know, investment, trade, business, and business. Those are the other, government, that's the other big one too, make up the rest of GDP. But 67% of GDP from 2010 to 2020, when we had the 6% savings rate, was personal consumption. When the savings rate fell down to 4%, it went from 67% to 69%, the red area on this chart on the right. We are spending more money. We are buying more units. It's not just because inflation's higher. We are buying more units because this is after inflation. And so that's the difference coming out of this. And we're not the only one that's spending more money. So is the federal government with its large budget deficits. We're buying more things, and that is why the economy is staying strong, and that is why it's keeping a persistent demand on stuff and services to keep inflation more in the 3% range, and then throw in choke points and bottlenecks here and there from supply chains or whatever else, or supply, and that's why we've got a relatively sticky inflation world. And this is hard for people to understand because they keep thinking 2019 is going to return. Here's how the world works. Here's how the model worked that we developed in 2012 of how the world works. We should be on our way back to 2%. Why aren't we on our way back to 2%? It can't be the model's wrong. It has to be some exogenous one-time thing. So therefore, we could say ignore this number. But today's report was such that it's hard to report this number. So if you jump to the next chart, this is unusual what's happening because it's unique to the United States. So this is 2024 estimates of GDP, that same Bloomberg survey I showed you before with inflation, but now I just cast it a little bit differently as a time series. So the black line is, what do economists think GDP will average in 2024 for the US? And you can see that back in August and September, it was like 0.8. It was not a very good economy. And now it's 2.1, which is very close to trend growth. But all the other colored lines, so Japan, Canada, the Eurozone, the United Kingdom, and Germany, they're going down. They're going down and we're going up. We're the old Sesame Street song, if you're old enough, one of these does not look like the other. And that is the United States. So go to the final chart. And the final chart shows you personal consumption. So they do ask a question to all these economists, what do you think about consumption? The black line is the US, we're buying stuff, and we're gonna keep buying stuff, and then we're going to buy more stuff. But the rest of the world is not. So that shutdown, restart of the economy changes things. The YOLO, that's my guess, is the fact is we are buying more stuff. Why did we change our behavior to buy more stuff? That's speculation. I think it's part YOLO, you only live once. And I think it's also, I don't need to save all this money in case, you know, use a technical term, everything hits the fan, because it hit the fan 4 years ago and the government mailed me thousands of dollars. And I expect that if it hits the fan in the future, they'll mail me thousands of dollars again. I know a lot of people push back on that last part, go, no, they won't. They won't mail it to you. Well, yeah, I understand you're thinking that they won't, but they did the last time and nothing changes behavior. Like, what did they do the last time? Expect that the next time. You know, and so that there, you know, there is, but whatever, if you want to quibble with me about that reasoning, that's fine. But the fact is we are spending more. That is the hallmark of this cycle. The rest of the world is not. And that is driving our economy and that is driving our inflation rate. And that will probably continue to be.
So what should we expect next?
So the big one is the Fed. And the Fed, and you know, the parlor game that we're all asking, when's the Fed going to cut rates? And the simple answer for that is, if the reason we are all talking about rate cuts right now is simply because Chairman Powell has repeatedly said they will cut rates. He expects they will cut rates sometime this year. So as I like to joke, Jay said he's going to cut rates. That's why we're talking about it. But if you somehow remove that from the equation and he never said that, and you gave to the typical economist, here's GDP, here's inflation, here's what the stock market's been doing this year, here's what crypto's been doing this year, here's what corporate bonds have been doing this year, your conclusion is there will be no rate cut. There will flat out be no rate cut based on the economy, inflation, and financial markets. The only reason we're talking about this is because Jay said it. But I think that the data is going to continue to be at odds with what Chairman Powell is saying, and that is going to continue to be it. Or as I like to say, we're recording the day of the inflation report. And what happened in the wake of the inflation report is the market pricing, the probability from the Fed Fund futures contracts priced less than 50%, now down in the low 20s, that there will be a June rate cut and a July rate cut is also now under 50%. A September rate cut's like in the low 70s right now. September was 100% just a couple of days ago. Let me restate what I just said. The rate cut is now 6 months away. And what I've argued is that the rate cut will always be 3 to 6 months away. And in 3 to 6 months, it will be 3 to 6 months away. And 3 to 6 months after that, it'll be 3 to 6 months away. It will never, ever be tomorrow if the data continues like it is. The hallmark of this recovery is the spending, government and personal, and we're driving spending and we're driving this economy hotter and inflation higher. And the rate cuts are going to be hard. The market is going to start to understand this. Interest rates are going to continue to head higher as well. How long is it going to last? The entire cycle. When will the spending slow down? When we have a recession. What will cause the recession? There's an economist at the Fed, Rudy Dornbusch, and he has a great line, and he says, economic expansions do not die of old age, they're murdered. And I think that's exactly right. The natural state for a capitalist economy like ours is to expand, is to have positive GDP every year, because capitalists are out there seeking good ideas and avoiding bad ideas. And so the economy continues to expand. What in 90% of the years, if you go back, you know, decades and decades, you have an expansion. What causes a recession? Something, to use Dornbusch's line, comes along and murders it. Well, the biggest murder weapon in history has always been a spike in oil prices, a war or some calamity and price of oil. Like in 1991, Iraq invaded Kuwait and the price of oil literally in the space of about 4 weeks went from $10 to $40, a 400% rise in the price of oil. And gasoline prices went up in a like amount in a very short period of time. and it murdered the economy and we had a recession. The other big murder weapon is interest rates. They keep going up and they keep going up and they get to suffocating levels and they break things and they murder the economy. Well, the thinking was that's 5% on the funds rate. But the reality is the stock market was at an all-time high, except for today. It's backed off of it. Economy is doing fine. Inflation's running a little bit hot, and there's been plenty of speculative juices. Just look at crypto. In other words, 5% interest rates is not the break point. Now, yesterday, Jamie Dimon spoke, and he said it might be 8% that we could see interest rates go. I get his sentiment that he's saying that, you know, these level of rates is not punishing. And if you're looking for to slow the economy, it might take much higher interest rates. So what should we expect? More of the same. Strong economy, sticky inflation, higher interest rates, no cuts until something comes along and breaks or murders this economy. Now, I gave the two most likely based on history, oil prices and interest rates. It could be something else. It could be housing prices like it was in 2006. It could be geopolitical. It could be something that no one has considered. It could be a pandemic like it was in 2020. But something comes along and breaks it. So how long will this spending last until something comes along and murders the economy? Is that later this year or is that in 10 years or somewhere in between? But I think that this idea that we're on a glide path, last mile to 2%, it might be a little bit bumpy. I've actually argued that the last mile's over. We're there. And it's a more of a 3% world and that we need to kind of adjust our thinking for that right now. I think financial markets are maybe beginning to think that way. And I think we start to have to think that. And I think it all starts with this is not the 2020 or pre-2020 economy anymore, like the LEI said. This is a different economy. Different does not mean worse. It means different. And we need to stop waiting for the economy to normalize because this is normal. And we need to start to understand what this normal is about.
Jim, thank you for your thoughts today, and thank you everyone for joining us. If you have any questions on Arbor Research, Bianco Research, or Arbor Data Science, you can contact us by emailing Gus Handler at gus.handler@arborresearch.com. Thanks again, and have a great day.